Welcome to the sidelines. We're back. It's Matt Dolliff. I'm here with Ty Anderson. And for some reason, it feels like it's been years since we last did this podcast, but I think it's only been a week. I don't know when the weeks have blended together at this point. I have no sense of time or, you know, days, calendars, things like that. So I'm not sure how long it's been since we did that post-Bruins post-mortem right after they crapped out of the season. But we are back. We're going to try to keep doing this every week. And I'm just happy that it's fall now. It's been hot a little this week, but we have gotten a taste of the fall. It's the only season in New England that's actually good weather-wise. You got the cold, snowy, miserable winters. You got the oppressively hot, humid, even more miserable summers. In spring, it basically just rains every day. So do you feel the same way as me, Ty? Are you happy that it's finally September and we're going to have some comfortable weather?
Yeah, I think it's when I lived in a building that had air conditioning, like, and it was – my old apartment was a garden level one, so it was basement, so it was always cold.
That's a great euphemism, like garden
for,
level.
For basement.
That's all. Right? That sounds nice. Nope, you're underground.
Yeah, you're
which
underground.
Which means you're dirt is what they're in garden level.
You never see the sun. It's great.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's different when you're in a brick building that is definitely like 100 years old and haunted. So it's way hotter in here than normally. So I always like fall. It feels weird that it's not the traditional fall. Like right now, what is today's date? The 9th? Or the, something like that. I'd be ready to go to Bruins training camp right now. And we'd be getting prepped for week one. We're getting one of those things right now, but not getting the second one, having a traditional fall in the sense of prepping for hockey season and then in the NBA season. Feels a little weird, but I don't mind everything else about it, if that makes sense. I like apple flavored things. So
yeah, like the air. The air is nice and crisp. The trees are going to start growing back, and the air is going to be comfortable. We're not going to be sweating our asses off. We don't need to bundle up and wear hoodies and sweats and all that stuff. That's why I like it, and that's why we're probably going to get 4 days of it until it immediately snows and our cars are trapped under ice. But, yes, you mentioned apple. I assume you're an anti-pumpkin guy, because now is the time of the year where the pumpkin debate starts up. Where do you stand?
You know, it's not that I don't like pumpkin. It's that pumpkin is a very strong flavor. So, you know, you gotta embrace pumpkin like entirely. And I'm not crazy about it. I like apple more. If you're giving me the choice, okay, you're gonna have apple or pumpkin. I'm gonna take apple every time. It's not even a debate.
Yeah.
My current air freshener that we have in the hallway is apple. I have the choice: pumpkin or apple. Pumpkin or apple. I was like, apple. This isn't even a debate, son.
Right,
so I'm team apple.
Clearly, it's clearly apple. Not a debate. Apple is in the conversation for the best fruit. You know, it might be in the conversation for best food overall. So I completely agree with you there. Yeah, I'm a pumpkin pie guy. And I used to be basically addicted to pumpkin muffins and those things at Dunkin' Donuts. They would basically wreak havoc on my digestive system. But I was so addicted, I would just keep going back and getting those every day. I'm glad I've kicked that habit. But yeah, I don't understand the pumpkin spice coffee or pumpkin beer or anything like that. And I know you don't drink any of that stuff. So I'm glad that you should be comfortable that you don't have to engage in that debate. You can just say coffee stinks, and that'll really get the people going.
But, I like apple cider. That's great.
Oh, apple cider is tremendous. Yeah, I haven't had apple cider in a long time.
It's very expensive.
Yes, it does seem expensive.
They know what they got. They know they got you by the balls, and they're like, "Oh, you like apple cider, huh? How about $5?" You're like, "Oh yeah. My god, that's way too much."
Yeah, like, do they cut the apples with diamonds? Why is it so expensive to make?
They're the blood apples.
Yeah, well, it requires the blood of children to make cider. But yeah, I don't even remember the last time I went on like one of those day farm trips. That seems like something you and your girlfriend would do. I don't know if they even allow apple picking or pumpkin picking or anything like that right now. I've seen Instagrams, but that could be one way to put a kind of a damper on fall. You can't do that shit.
By the time I go, all I have are crab apples left, and I got to eat crab apples for dinner. I don't need that. I'm like, hey, can I get a donut? They're like, no, you get a crab apple though. I'm like, I don't want that.
You're sitting there with a giant plate of one crab apple, cutting it up with a steak knife. Oh, this isn't fun.
Yeah.
Well, fall was supposed to be fun.
I'm like, can I get peanut butter with it? Like, no, you can get salt. I'm like, I don't want that either.
Oh, my God. Well, but you could have this all natural peanut butter. It just tastes like a melted peanut.
I don't
know. Give me something with sugar, please.
So, living where we live, there's that Night Shift Brewery. And I went there one night just because it has nothing for me. But my
friend, what the hell do you do there?
Oh, it was awful. I was so close to being like, do you guys have a kids menu or something? Like, there's nothing for me. There's nothing
like,
for me there.
What are you going to do? You can't even talk about hipster stuff. You would look the part, but you're not going to,
No, exactly. And so I remember.
You're not into like weird electro alternative hippie crap.
Oh, man. Yeah. I hate the Lumineers so much. That's not probably related. I just hate that band so much.
True hipsters probably hate them too.
Ah, they're awful. I went there and it's next to a peanut butter factory. You know this? That it's next to a peanut butter factory?
I did not know this.
And you can.
It's not Teddy's, is it? Because that's what I remember. That's what I was referring to before.
That's the one. That's the one. It's next to a peanut butter factory.
I knew it was in the area.
So like every now and then you'd just be sitting there and you're like, what's like peanut butter? Like it was impossible to escape this. Probably one of the worst experiences of my life, honestly, being trapped at a brewery as a straight edge person and smelling peanut butter off and on every 20 minutes.
Right.
Not a good time.
They're just like, can I have some? All right. Open your mouth. Here comes a shovel of peanuts. That's not what I was talking about. All right. Jim Murray is a big proponent. Jim Murray of 95 The Sports Hub is a big proponent of Teddy's. So maybe you should look into some sponsorships or something. I didn't realize how local they really were.
Oh yeah, they're right in. I don't know if it's Everett or Medford, but it's right in town.
Right. I found peanut butter that's good for keto because it's the low carb content. But I end up like just eating it out of the jar with a spoon like an absolute crazy person. So.
Oh yeah.
I should probably cut back on that habit.
If you live alone, who cares, right? Do whatever you want.
Exactly.
You can have candy for dinner, and no one's gonna be able to say anything to you.
I've done that too. I've had the cereal and Reese's dinner. My stomach was not a fan of that.
Well, that's still not the most depressing dinner one can eat. The most depressing dinner you could ever eat, in my opinion, is a bagel. Just a bagel. That's it. Nothing says I'm a defeated adult more like a bagel for dinner at about 9:45 p.m.
Oh, so, you put some cream cheese, some butter on it? No, just plain.
Yeah.
Untoasted.
It's unbelievable. It's the worst thing you can do for you.
It's like Dan Aykroyd in the Blues Brothers movies. What do you like? I just want toast, plain,
yeah,
it's burnt. It's like, what? That does not sound appetizing in the least. Well, it's good for my taste buds. Yeah, so, I mean, but no, I'm having eggs every morning, and I know you're not an egg guy. But that's where we're at now. But, yeah, I'm just happy it's fall. Have you done your back-to-school shopping yet?
I need to clean the apartment literally top to bottom shopping, if that makes any sense.
Oh, wow. So you went out and bought some Fantastic and stuff like that?
Yeah. It's just, during the playoffs, during the Bruins playoff run, I basically throw every responsibility out the window and just focus on that. And I looked around the apartment a couple of days ago, and I just went, holy shit, I got to clean this place.
Yeah.
Just not a great looking, apartment. So, deep cleaned it, feeling good. Not living in what feels like complete. Not living like an unsupervised 11-year-old. I guess is the best way I can describe how my apartment looks right now.
It's been a while since I lived with a clean freak, so I haven't had to clean my place too often. I'm not a slob or anything, but. It does feel good to have a nice apartment deep clean. I like a good apartment clean. You take up two and a half hours, you clean the crap out of everything. Everything's shiny, looking nice, smelling like lemons, and then you just collapse onto the couch and watch hockey or whatever the hell's on. And it feels good. I think it feels good. I think you'll enjoy it. Once you get a sense of accomplishment just letting a pile of gunk and mildew build up and then clean it all at once. You know?
That's the way it is. That's the way you got to do it.
I feel like you have a sick mind if you're cleaning everything constantly and everything needs to be spotless all the time. You know, you gotta allow for a little bit of mess.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's a little like daunting because as soon as you're done with it, you're like, all right, I got to do that once a week. And then you never do it. You never.
That's exactly
you never follow
what happens
up.
To me. I always say this is going to be my Saturday morning routine or something like that. And then like five Saturdays later, okay, I guess I'll clean this cat fur off the couch now. And there's like an inch of fur.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sneezing all over the place. There's dirt on the floor.
It's the same concept.
I just peed on the floor and left it there. No, I don't do that. I'm sorry. But yeah, cleaning dust and stuff like that, that's always good. And, yeah, so yeah, it's time, you know, there's spring cleaning. I think fall cleaning is always a good thing because summer,
fall
you're just sweating everywhere and you're getting you're feeling lazy because everything the sun is just zapping you of all your energy and you just don't feel like doing any of that crap. And now it's, now you can feel like you can start anew. So I think you've inspired me now. I think I'm finally going to clean my apartment. It's been about a month. I've only done like the surface level cleaning, but now I think it's time to do the old mopping and all that crap.
Yeah, I just clean, you slob. What's wrong with you?
Hey, you know, it's don't need it. as long as I just do the surface level stuff, I'll feel good about myself. But yeah, it's fall, which means it is football season, so I'm glad we're getting football back. We've been doing most of our podcasts about the Bruins, obviously. We did all those post-game shows. It was a miserable ending to hockey season, and we have plenty of time to get into like the off season and you know what they need to do and what might happen. And I don't know how much you've been watching since the Bruins got eliminated in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we already get into that a little bit. But I want to gauge your thoughts on the Patriots because we sort of need to switch gears here. We're in a real football week. I know you've said that like you're not feeling these empty arena games, but you know, we sort of just had to accept it, and I know it's weird, but I think it is. It's going to be weird. It's going to be weird with huge football stadiums not having fans in it. Gillette Stadium's going to be empty for a while, but I mean, just the Patriots team. I don't know. Do you feel good? How do you feel? What's your vibe going into this?
I can see this team. First game. I can see this team going 11-5, and I can see them going 6-10.
Oh, sweet.
It really does feel like that kind of year, but ultimately, I mean, listen, COVID sports make no sense. They make no sense at all. The things that should happen don't happen. The teams that should win lose. So it's been, you know, I don't know what to predict per se, but I know that I'm excited. And I've said this to you from day one, that I'm excited about this team and just seeing what happens now, moving on from what were literally championship or bust expectations has to be a little bit of a sigh of relief. I know that sounds almost sacrilegious, but there was so much pressure all the time. And now I just get to watch football. I get to watch development. I get to watch it uninterrupted. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, if you're a Patriots fan wanting to see that second wave come through, we've talked about this before, sort of the organizational reset that this team has done. They've done that in the past while having to compete for a championship because they had the best quarterback in the league. Now they don't necessarily have that expectation or that pressure. And I'm very curious to see how that plays out, especially on defense with some of these guys that you've written about and that you've talked about with, you know, Winovich, Duggar, with Uche, with Jennings. I mean, there's so many guys that I look at and I say, I'm very excited to watch this guy either take that next leap or be a factor on defenses.
Yeah. There are a lot of guys that have to step up. I think you make a good point about the pressure. I mean, the pressure internally is probably the same. Bill Belichick's probably looking at these guys like, no, we're still trying to win the Super Bowl here. But I think you make a good point that like literally since 2003, I guess, since after the 2003 season, 15 years, straight years or whatever it was, the expectation was win the Super Bowl or it's a disappointment. Now, it's not going to be a disappointment if they don't win the Super Bowl. I mean, I know that Cam Newton might play really well and the expectations might change if they go 11-5, 12-4, like, and they just keep on rolling. And Cam Newton looks like an MVP candidate. Like, the expectation will change. Now, then we'll say, okay, they have Belichick. They have a great quarterback. It's time to go win another Super Bowl. But I think that pressure is sort of off the viewers and the people covering the team And so we're not sitting here saying like we're demanding one particular result or else everything sucks. I feel like that has been the vibe around this team for way too long. But I think that's what makes it a fun season. I think it's a compelling season. I think it's a fascinating season, particularly because Bill Belichick and Tom Brady finally broken up. And I talked about this with Alex Barth in our little Patriots preview, which you should have seen Barth. Oh, my God, is he excited? Talks of football. Oh, my pants are off. I'm like, stop it. That's indecent. We do not need this. This is a family program. We had to hose him down a couple times. It was crazy. I mean, we gotta get that kid in line, put a leash on him or something. Jeez. But, no, he loves talking football, and we enjoyed getting into the nitty-gritty stuff. And he feels good about the defense. He brought up the guys on the defense, young guys like Chase Winovich. Jawan Williams is an interesting one to me because I don't know if you saw today that Aqib Talib is starting a podcast. He retired. But he revealed in like his first ever video promo clip on his podcast that Bill Belichick called him and said, come play for the Patriots. We'll pay you $6 million and I'm going to put you on the tight end every week, which would have been – this would have been awesome if Talib came back here for one more year. I loved him as a player and his personality and all that. One of the more entertaining sports figures we've had in this town and in the NFL. But that just raises an interesting question, though, because Bill's looking at it saying, how the hell are we going to cover tight ends this year? And I think if we want to get into the defense a little bit, I think that's the big question because they're facing basically all the best tight ends in the league this year. They face George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews on the Ravens, Darren Waller on the Raiders had a breakout year last year. They're covering some big athletic tight ends in the passing game. And they have no Pat Chung, who usually takes on that role. He was good at it, maybe not like elite at it, so maybe they could stand to get better based on how they've covered tight ends. They need someone to step up, and that's where I think Jawan Williams is going to be that guy. And I think that's another guy, in addition to the first-round pick from the same draft, N'Keal Harry, that people just love to write off. People just love to look for a target, call a guy a bust after 1 year, and just completely crap on him, not even give him a chance. I think it's time to see what Jawan Williams can do, and I think just their depth in the secondary the depth at cornerback is going to make it hard for him to get on the field. So I think Jawan Williams is a guy to watch as far as stepping in and covering tight ends. Chase Winovich I love. I think if they're going to have any kind of pass rush, he's going to have to make a step forward in year two. You mentioned Duggar. I don't know how Duggar's going to get on the field unless they play a lot of big nickel. Barth even said four safeties. They're going to play a four safety set, which I don't know if that's even been done before. But
there's one guy to do.
Anyone you're excited to see?
I'm excited to see Damian Harris if and when he gets on the field this year, because last year was a red shirt year for him. And I know that's offense and not defense, but
no, you talk about whatever, yeah.
Basically, they treated him like a red shirt last year. He didn't play at all. It was a crowded backfield. You understand it. But there is an opening for him this year if he can get on the field and be healthy. And so I want to see what he can do. I mean, he's an Alabama back, which gets me all hot and bothered because I know that program and the guys that they produced over the years. So I want to see what that looks like at this level. But I think that if you can get something out of him, I do think that this Patriots team as currently constituted, especially without a preseason here, they're going to be built to beat teams up. And I think having a quarterback who's, 250 pounds and can run the ball as well. And having this
catch the ball too.
Yeah. And having this many running backs, this will allow you to beat up on teams. So if you have another guy in that backfield who can do that, Damian Harris, that makes you a more dangerous team. And that's where the Patriots can be smarter than everybody else, where their conditioning comes into play. And Belichick says, okay, well, you're an out-of-shape defense who hasn't played football in 8 months. Here's four running backs and a quarterback who can run it too. Have fun. That might sort of minimize some of their problems in the passing game, not having what we consider to be an elite grouping of wideouts.
Yeah, I mean, well, Damian Harris, this is another point that Barth made, and I've heard others make this point. Like, Alabama running backs sort of go one of two directions. Either they're like a slow, plodding back who's like overpowers people in college, but at the NFL level, he gets stood up and just has nothing in him. Like, Trent Richardson is a prime example of that. He looked like he was going to be an elite back, but he crapped out real quick. But then you got guys like Derrick Henry and Damian Harris. Derrick Henry is obviously a moose. But he has, like, surprising speed for a guy his size. He's explosive for a guy his size. Damon Harris has a little bit of explosion to him, and he can catch the ball. He's versatile. He plays bigger than his size would indicate. So, and I mean, he was getting rave reviews. People were literally saying he's, like, the MVP of training camp. I know, people like to roll their eyes at a running back getting that kind of recognition, but last Super Bowl the Patriots won was on strength of their running game. And I know, like, Sony Michel has become people's target on Twitter or whatever over the years. The hot takes have descended on Sony Michel, I guess, as the new target. Now that Tuke is probably on the way out as that person. Now it's Sony Michel and N'Keal Harry. These are the guys that are just going to get beat up for, I think, unfairly, to an unfair level. Michel has an opportunity in front of him. He's going to have a few weeks, I think, to reclaim that lead back role. But, the good thing is that with COVID, the IR can only be 3 weeks. You can bring a guy back after 3 weeks this year. So hopefully that's the case with Damian Harris and his hand injury. And hopefully
Is there still a limit on activating guys, though? Like, if you put a guy in IR, like, can you only activate two or three of them?
I think that's unlimited too. I think they basically, because of COVID, turned IR into like a 10-day injured list, like a baseball. I think it's sort of like that now. And maybe there's a separate distinction for like, we're going to put him on season-ending injured reserve or something, just so you can make sure he doesn't count against the roster, I guess.
Yeah.
The rules are different. They could activate guys off the practice squad and make a 55-man roster. So Bill will probably do that at kicker on like Sunday at 9 a.m. just to F with everybody.
Of course.
That's another thing, is they don't have a kicker on the main roster. But I don't know. I think he's probably just looking. He just wants to take a longer look at the two guys. And that's another one that Rohrwasser's just a bust. You know, they're not even giving him a chance now because he had a bad camp. And I get that he had a bad camp. But, like, this is where, like, people – I think Rohrwasser's an example where people will make a draft pick what they want it to be based on what they want their take to be. They want to kill Belichick for making a poor draft choice and having bad drafts. So they want to say, like, this is a bust of a fifth-round pick, where any level-headed person looks at it and says a fifth-round pick and an undrafted free agent are almost the same thing. A fifth-round pick will make a little bit more money, but you're essentially talking about lottery tickets when you get to the fifth, sixth, seventh round and undrafted guys. I honestly think the Patriots just look at it and, like, they target guys for the late rounds. They identify guys they want, and if they say, you know, we want this guy, screw it, let's take him in the fifth round instead of waiting till after the draft and risking that some other team takes. You know, I feel like that's what they do, and like they moved up in the draft to take Jake Bailey last year. They nailed that pick. And people were like, what are you doing taking a punter in the fifth round? And then all of a sudden, Bailey starts punting the ball. And like, wow, this kid is dynamic as a punter. Like, if you were describing that punter as athletic and dynamic and all that stuff, Jake Bailey is an example. But, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, people will just say, like, oh, people will just pretend a fifth-round draft pick has real value when the pick doesn't work out and it happens to be a position of need. And, like, you know, they just want to – I think people just want to poke holes in Bill Belichick, which is understandable.
Yeah, and I do think that Rohrwasser here is sort of hurt by the fact that he wasn't considered the premier kicker in this draft.
Right.
I think that if they got one of the other guys, I forget, was his name?
It was an outside the box pick, but Rodrigo Blankenship and he was Tyler like Bass were considered better prospects.
The top guys. So
I think those guys were undrafted. I think Rohrwasser was the only kicker that was drafted. So it's obviously outside the box.
Exactly.
But I think Patriots look at it as like, we're going to target guys and we're not going to risk other teams taking them because these picks are all the same anyway. So I think that's sort of their approach. Mm-hmm. But I think it was, I think you're right. I think he was hurt by other kickers being more highly touted.
Yeah.
But who cares?
Tyler Bass is
Mel Kiper said, Tyler Bass is a better kicker, so that means, you know, Bill Belichick doesn't know what he's doing, I think. And there were reports that Rohrwasser was injured, so I think Bill just wants to take a bit of a longer look. And I think I still think Nick Folk will be the kicker after all that said. But Folk was good last year. Two of his three misses came in that, like, weird monsoon game where they played the Cowboys and it was horrible weather.
So, it was the worst weather ever.
It was horrible. I hate a misty rain. the heavy rain, it's at least like, you know, you're walking into a disaster. Misty rain is like, you think you're going to survive, but then it's just like completely off-putting and uncomfortable. And I just hate it.
So you think it's going to be Folk, though? If you had to handicap it, you'd say it's going to be him?
To start the season, I think it will be Folk. Yeah, I think once Rohrwasser is ready, though, the bill will go to him. That's my prediction.
Yeah, and he was stable from where you need him to be. I'm taking a quick look at his stats. 14 for 17. His misses were all from 40 yards plus. You know, so he's not missing the 25 yarders, the 32 yard gimmies. So he's getting you those points. That's what will concern me. You know, if Folk were being brought back, but he was, you know, he was 13 for 19 and five of the misses were from inside the 35, I'd be like, ugh, I don't want this, because that's the dangerous territory. But 14 for 17, again, all the misses came from 40 yards out. I'll take that, because that feels in line with what the league average is, you know, outside of some of these studs that you have in other cities. And I think that's comparable as well to what you get from Gostkowski coming back from his hip injury. So I'll take it. Yeah, I don't mind Folk. For me, it's just a matter of, yeah, you want to see the kid they drafted actually get a chance at the NFL level. It's just a matter of if and when that does come.
Yeah, I mean, Rohrwasser gets his crap together. That's your best off. That's your best chance at having a guy who can make you a 50-yard field goal or 55-yard field. I mean, ultimately, you want to be able to take that chance. You don't want to have to be punting from the 35 or whatever because your kicker has a noodle leg. But Folk was accurate, and he'll make the gimmies. He'll be the guy to start the season once Rohrwasser sort of gets stabilized. I think he will go in there. So switching to the offense, I've been over this many times with you on the air, off the air. I guess I don't know. I guess it's a bold prediction, because people are almost like wishing it into existence that the Patriots are going to suck offensively, and they still have no weapons. They still can't. They don't know. Cam Newton isn't going to figure out the offense. He's going to make mistakes, turn the ball over, all that stuff. I am still saying that the offense is going to be better this year than it was in 2018 and 2019. Define better? I don't know. Like, I think they will average. They will score more points per game than they did the last 2 years. And I say that without having the official numbers in front of me. But I assume last year it was bottom half of the league, and the year before that, I remember it wasn't great either. But I mean, they had some high scoring games in 2018, like the 43-40 game against the Chiefs. So maybe they had good points per game numbers. But compared to last year, this is what I keep saying. Bill Belichick took the Patriots to 12-4 with a below average offense and a below average passing offense. I know that sounds sort of like blasphemy, because we are talking about Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time. He minimized mistakes. He didn't turn the ball over. He made smart decisions when the play wasn't there. And like, it wasn't all his fault, because the receivers weren't great. They weren't getting open often enough. They had nothing at tight end. The offensive line had too many injuries, I think. They didn't have the same continuity as before. So they struggled. It was dysfunctional. But I think a big reason why they were dysfunctional is because it's clear now that Brady knew he wasn't going to be coming back here after last year, and he sort of had a foot out the door. And I know people don't like to hear that, but he admitted to Howard Stern in that interview that he pretty much knew going into last season that it was going to be his last year. And I thought it was crazy to be like harping on Brady having this pissy attitude and pouting after all these wins. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I still think that in retrospect, it's like, they're winning the games. Who cares? But now just looking at the team in front of us, and then with the benefit of hindsight, the guy didn't want to be here. He wasn't happy. He wasn't getting on the same page with the receivers. And I think it was, and I'm not blaming him per se. I think it's hard when you have new young receivers coming in and they have to be so perfect with their route running, and the timing has to be perfect, that I think Brady had just run out of that patience, because he was already thinking like, I'm going to get out of here after this season. I can't figure it out with these guys. Now I think it's going to be a little different, because Cam Newton offense is not going to be based entirely on timing. He's not going to need guys to be always getting separation right in their routes. He's not going to need guys to be in the exact spot. He's going to be able to escape the pocket, throw on the run, improvise, things like that. I think N'Keal Harry is a better kind of receiver for Cam Newton. I think he's going to he throws jump balls. He takes chances. Like we're going to see different things that we saw with Tom Brady in terms of Cam's probably going to make some mistakes with the ball. He's going to throw more interceptions. There's not going to be as much discipline, I guess, if you want to put it that way. But he's going to make plays, I think, as long as he stays healthy. Like, Cam Newton's going to make plays. Like, I'm starting to think the guy's going to play out of his mind, but I don't want to get too ahead of myself because we don't know if he's going to stay healthy based on recent history. But I don't know. That's my opening rant on the offense, and I'll share that on Twitter and get flamed all the way to hell for it. But I think they're going to be better because the quarterback is Cam Newton as good as Tom Brady? I mean, I don't know. Maybe a 31-year-old Cam Newton can measure up to a 43-year-old Brady at this point in their careers. But he's not Tom Brady. He's never going to reach those same heights. Mm-hmm. But I think they'll be better overall because the quarterback is engaged, motivated, wants to play well, wants to play for that next contract. He's all in. They have I'll take an all-in Cam Newton over a barely half-in Tom Brady at this point. So I think it's going to be beneficial. The breakup is going to be beneficial for both Belichick and Brady is what I'm saying. I think. And that's why I think the offense is going to be better. So, yeah, rant over. Floor is yours.
I would agree with that in the sense that I do think that at this point in his career, I think that Tom Brady would like the path of least resistance. That's not a bad thing. It's just that he's 43 years old. Does he want to have to put the whole thing on his shoulders all the time? Probably not. He probably wants – I mean, he's probably so happy with the situation in Tampa where you have a Mike Evans, a Chris Godwin, O.J. Howard, LeSean McCoy, Leonard Fournette, Rob Gronkowski out of retirement. You know, like there's not as much pressure on him to make a superstar. It's like he has right. other stars around him. So I do think that, yeah, a 43-year-old Brady wants the path of least resistance, wants the express ride to the Super Bowl because he's earned that right. Given his career, he's earned that right. I think Cam Newton, however, is just so desperate for that next chance after this year because if he fails, it's over. That he's like, yeah, sure, give me that. I'll make that work. Yep, give me that guy. I'll throw it to him. I got no problem doing that.
Yeah.
And I do think that you look at last year's offense, it was a middle-of-the-pack offense. The rushing game, it had its moments, but it really wasn't all that great. The third-down offense, again, middle-of-the-pack. I think they finished somewhere 15th or 16th by the year's end. It felt like they were a lot worse than they were. I remember looking it up being like, wow, I was surprised they finished that high. But it never got on the same page. And I feel as if that you had a quarterback who I'm not blaming him for it, but I don't think that he was necessarily thrilled with his options. And I think that played out onto the field some weeks.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, to your point, you have a quarterback now who's going to say, yep, whatever, let's do it. You know, like it's more, I think the mentality you're getting with Cam is more of the mentality that Brady had, you know, almost two decades ago where,
yeah, just and even after they drafted, even after they drafted Garoppolo, like the same,
same
level of motivation, you know, to prove Belichick wrong or prove anyone wrong, you know.
Yeah,
I think you have that same sort of fire in Cam Newton. And to your point about the disconnects, yeah, like you can't like blame anyone. I just don't think it was the right mix to have. And I think that's why they tried to get tried to go out of their way to get veteran guys for Brady. It's why why they brought in Josh Gordon and they brought in Antonio Brown and then they brought in Mohamed Sanu with the trade. Brady's probably looking at it saying, like, guys, I need a veteran. I need a guy who's going to be able to pick this up quickly and get on the same page with me because it's just not working with the younger guys. So, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, for me, I think that when we talk about their struggles developing young wideouts, drafting young wideouts in the past, that has to play a factor, right? I mean, that has to be something that you look at and say, okay, well, you know, is he going to get the ball or is he going to get phased out or how long does he have to wait? And Jacoby Myers might suck. He might suck for all I know. But you can't tell me that it wouldn't have helped had Brady been here for the OTAs and in the mini camps and everything. Like they would have been on a more normal schedule in terms of getting on the same page. It's so hard to get on the same schedule in season when there's so much going on and when you have to win the games. it just feels as if I think that everyone contributed to what was that fault there. You know, is Brady here for OTAs if he has a contract? Probably. Should he have been here regardless because he's a fierce competitor and they have rookie wideouts? Yes, I think he should have been here. So I think both things can be true. I don't want to box us into saying whose fault it is. But I do think that having a guy like Cam will be beneficial for the younger guys and the second-year pros that we're talking about. I'm very curious to see how it pans out with the tight ends here, because I do think that if Ryan is always your best tight end, that's a failure. I would say that's not good. I don't want that to be the case in 2020.
Yeah, I think it's just hard for rookie tight ends to really make a splash unless you're Rob Gronkowski. You know what I mean? Like, I really like Dalton Keene. I think he's going to be versatile. He's number 44, which tells me he's going to play some fullback, which will be interesting to see. And they'll, like, you know, motion him out of the backfield. They'll be able to do the things that they used to do with James Devlin with Dalton Keene more effectively, I think. Assuming they run similar plays for Cam Newton. But, yeah, I'm interested to see what the tight ends can do. But I don't know. I think the fact that they kept 10 offensive linemen tells me that they're probably going to – they want to run those heavy kind of sets where you would have two tight ends. But I think a lot of the times you're going to see an extra offensive lineman on the field, which will probably lend itself to the playing like a big, heavy power running game where they have the option of the running back or the fullback or Cam Newton himself carrying the ball. I think you'll see a lot of that. I think Josh McDaniels is probably excited to have a different kind of quarterback to work with. I think there's all – you heard those rumors that Josh McDaniels wanted to draft Lamar Jackson, which is, you know, it's easy to point out now. It's like, yeah, we wanted that guy. But, yeah, I think they're all going to be rejuvenated. I think both sides. Brady is clearly rejuvenated. He's probably going to light it up. And I think the Patriots are revitalized a little bit, at least on the offensive side of the ball, having to start fresh. And the thing about Cam, like, it's, I don't know if it's a misconception. I don't really know the general opinions on him, but, like, he's a really good teammate. You know, I don't know if there was a general consensus or if there was a take that he's not a good teammate, but, like, I get that he's, like, boisterous. He likes attention. He likes having cameras on him. He'll do the Superman poses and all that stuff. But I think it's a misconception to look at that and say he's selfish or, like, he's, like, a me guy. He's a guy who gets excited to watch his teammates make a play. He loves working with his teammates. He gives them all nicknames and secret handshakes, all that. He likes to build relationships with those guys. He's well liked. And so I think you saw that. The indication of that is that he was immediately voted a team captain. And I mean, Bill obviously isn't going to say he's the starting quarterback publicly. But clearly he is. And I think they have a good mix on offense, and that just lends to my point where I think they're going to improve offensively. Now, are they going to be as good defensively? Not so sure about that. With Dante Hightower opting out, Patrick Chung opting out, and
losing all those linebackers,
losing Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins, so they're going to have to rely on young guys. And when they've relied on young, inexperienced guys, it's gone a little sideways for the defense, especially a linebacker. But Juwan Bentley's in his third year, and he's had a couple of years to learn under really smart veteran players. He's a team captain. He's probably going to be the defensive signal caller, or at least one of them. Dietrich Wise described him as a field general type, three-year captain at Purdue. So I'm excited to see what Bentley can do. I don't know if he's going to have, like, the pure, like, explosiveness, athleticism that you see from a guy like Dante Hightower, but I think he's going to be in the right spot. He's going to do his job. He's going to make sure that the whole defense is on the same page, so that'll be interesting to see. And special teams is going to dominate. That's just what they do.
Yeah, with Bentley, I mean, we were a couple of years removed from him being the standout of the preseason.
And yeah, remember that?
He looked, and that was it.
We were watching him saying, like, "Oh crap, they got something here."
Yeah, and then he's injured. Was it a leg injury or
torn pectoral injury?
Okay, that's what it was. So and then he was out just like that. You never even got to see him. So
yeah, and then last year he's not going to have a chance to get on the field with that veteran.
No. And circling back to the point you made about the offensive linemen, do you think that this was sort of last year again was what felt like a redshirt year for two guys they acquired via trade, Corey Cunningham and Jermaine Illuminor? Both guys seem like that you've heard some good things about them from training camp. Cunningham is huge. You know, he's a big dude. But I'm curious what you think about those guys as well.
Illuminor is a guy. I mean, I think it was Jeff Howe who said, like, most of the pressure that you saw and the whatever you call pressure in a training camp drill came from the strong side, which means right tackle. And I think Illuminor might be the one question mark. He sounds like he's going to be the starting right tackle. And, I mean, I don't know. Marcus Cannon was obviously very good, and he was excellent in 2018. But I don't know. I'm not sure how good he was going to be this year if he kept playing. And he's a guy who has trouble staying on the field, too. We'll see with Illuminor. But I think having David Andrews back is massive. I think they're going to solidify the interior of that line. They're going to go back to the same kind of – similar kind of continuity they had in 2018 when that offensive line was just dominant, probably their best, like, unit. If you look just at the positional groups, it was probably the best, most valuable unit on the team that year. And, like, arguably the thing that won them the Super Bowl was the way they ran the ball and protected Tom Brady in the best possible situations. But, I think Isaiah Wynn is good. I think he's going to be a good left tackle. I think they're going to be able to run the ball a lot better than they were last year. And like I said before, I think you're going to see guys like Cunningham come on the field as an extra tackle to push around like a smaller defensive front. Because I do think this is what the Patriots are trying to move towards, is to emphasize size and strength on offense to go against these small, speedy defenses. Maybe he's gone a little out of his way to get guys that don't have speed, but I do think speed is overrated. And I think they're going to try to play bully ball again. And I mean, it worked for them in 2018. And, you know, and just to circle back quickly to the whole thing with Brady missing the OTAs, there's nuance to this. Like, people, like, the whole debate that whole time was like, it turned into like, Brady sucks because he's not going OTAs. The Patriots are going to suck because of it. It's like, my old take was that did it prevent them from winning a Super Bowl? Obviously not. But did they have to overcome deficiencies on offense due to being a little behind and not on the same page with the quarterback not coming to those offseason workouts? They absolutely had to overcome that. They did not maximize themselves. They did not maximize the chances of the offense being productive. So I think that's another change, is that they had everyone back. And I don't think David Andrews missed a little time at the start of camp, but they've had everybody there on the offensive line for most of the camp. So
continuity, I'm excited
to see what they could do. I think, especially with this week, the Miami Dolphins have four new starters on the offensive line, two of which are rookies. So I think if you just look at the two teams' offensive lines against the opposing defensive lines, I think the Patriots are going to have a much better chance to at least look functional on offense. And this just goes back to, I think Bill Belichick is still the best, by far the best coach in the league, best matchup advantage in the league when you compare him against other coaches. So I think he's going to have them more ready to go for the season. And they've emphasized fundamentals, techniques, and things like that. I think that's extremely important. And they've been sprinkling in more situational stuff. And it sounds like they've been more unpredictable with things like that. So I think especially a thing with, like, the things you don't typically look at in depth, like the offensive line and situational stuff, special teams, things like that. I think that's where they're going to have a distinct advantage, because Belichick's going to have them ready to go, and the other teams are going to look sloppy and dysfunctional by comparison. That's my thought on that.
I'm excited to see sort of what happens here, as you mentioned, with the offensive line for the other teams in the AFC East, and how that impacts what the Patriots can do pressure wise. Both the Jets and the Dolphins used first round picks on offensive linemen this year. The kid the Jets drafted at number 11 overall is absolutely huge. He's like 6 foot. I want to say he's like 6'8". I remember when they drafted him. I think he's out of Louisville. I remember writing about it for the website and just being like, I couldn't believe how big this guy was. Like, this is an offensive lineman now. So I want to see how these guys go against, you know, this younger defense is able to get to pressure the quarterback. Obviously, the Jets were ridiculous last year when it came to giving up pressure against their quarterback. We saw that with the whole, you know, the seeing ghosts. That was the birth of the boogeyman, right? Just the way that they were able to get, you know, under Darnold's skin there, just because he had no protection. And with Miami, they're going to have to protect. If it's going to be Tua eventually, we know it's going to be Fitzpatrick to start. But if it's going to be Tua, they got to protect him. I mean, given what the kid is coming back from. So
right.
That's an interesting sort of storyline to watch here in week one with Miami and New England, is can Can they pressure this quarterback? Can they get in the backfield with this younger group? It's young on young, right? It really is. It feels like it's a battle of two teams in the middle of a youth movement, you know, in multiple ways. So I'm excited for that. Again, that speaks to my overall point. I'm excited about this team more than I am the drama of last year. It's nice to be back to football and not Days of Our Lives, overanalyzing, psychoanalyzing every social media thing, every unfollow, every follow, whatever it is. This is what I want to be doing.
Yeah, you know, maybe we get that with Cam Newton. Maybe we need to see what happens. This is what I know we're probably going to hear a lot of this on our very airwaves. What's going to happen when they face adversity? How is Cam Newton going to react after a loss? Like, what's that going to look like? And, you know, people just love to – that's nice and negative, Maz. Nice take. I hated it. We're probably going to get a lot of that. But, it's fascinating. I'm excited to think, like, we don't know what's going to happen, which is sort of exciting. And, like, not that I'd be excited to watch them suck, but, like, I don't think they're going to suck. I'm pretty confident that Bill Belichick still has a good program. They still have a lot of good players. Like, I think I said back in the day, they still have effing good players. That was my overall take on the Patriots post-Tom Brady. And, you know, maybe it affects their ability to bring in a free agent or things like that. And you're seeing the Brady effect out of Tampa with the amount of people flocking that his way. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I think Belichick still has a ton of value, and I don't think he's lost his way as a coach at all. And I think he's gonna coach circles around guys in a lot of these games.
Yeah, and I think that's this schedule is ripe for circling, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Like the amount of coaches that are either inexperienced or maybe in over their head, I do think that he can expose that if he, you know, does his job the way that I think many of us, myself included, expect him to do after losing Tom Brady. I think that this is maybe the greatest coaching challenge Belichick has faced in at least a decade. You know, maybe you want to say the 4 weeks without Brady because the suspension required some of that with Brissett and with Garoppolo as his quarterback. But I think that this is the greatest challenge that he's faced as a coach in a long time. And I do think that if you had asked me, I think that Belichick was in the facility on March 19th, you know, or whatever it was that Brady left, already looking at opponents, already looking at film for next year, because he knows what he needs to do now to get this team to remain the elite competition that they have been for the last 20 years. So I think he knows what's in front of him. And that's another reason why I'm excited to see what transpires with this group, with this team, what their identity becomes. And that starts again at the top with Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Look, I hope I'm not wrong. I hope I'm not, hope it doesn't get shoved in my face. Like I see, I told you they suck, but, I don't know.
They'll tell
I
you
just feel like,
good.
I just feel like we're going to come out of this game saying, oh my God, how did they do that? It's like, did you really doubt Bill Belichick this much? Did you really think Bill Belichick wasn't going to be ready to shove it up their asses? Like, I just feel like he's going to have them ready to go. That's just my take on the matter. And I think based on what we saw the last couple of years of Brady, that the offense, it's going to look like a functional operation. You know, maybe they're going to be lacking in playmakers. Maybe N'Keal Harry won't be able to stay on the field. Maybe N'Keal Harry's a bust. I don't know. Maybe Sony Michel's going to get hurt again. Maybe they won't be able to run the ball like we're expecting. But I just think it's going to look more functional, and we'll see what happens there. The biggest question with the offense is just, are they going to be able to pull a win out of their ass when it comes down to 2 minutes game-winning drive situation? Because for so many years, you just knew that Tom Brady, given the ball 2 minutes left, and he's going to figure it out. Can Cam Newton do that same thing? That's going to be the big question. And they had pulling wins out of their asses at the end of the game, like down to a science. Like how many games? Sure. Like I've forgotten more of these types of wins than we could ever remember. That like where they had no business winning. They looked like they were just getting outplayed and outcoached. And but then they just they manage the clock enough to get the ball back in Brady's hands with 2 minutes left, and he figures it out. Mm-hmm. And like the game where they just pull it out at the very end, like that famous game against the Saints, the unicorns and show ponies type game. You know, like that's a game where it didn't look like they did enough to win, and then all of a sudden 3 seconds left, Tom Brady did the Tom Brady thing. So that is gonna be the big question, and that's been the big question since they lost Gronk. Like who's gonna make that play? But we'll see. I wanna see what happens on the field before I doubt, before I just dismiss it from happening.
Just don't be the Chargers, please. Every Chargers game I've ever watched the last, I think, 12 years has been they have the ball with a minute and 30 seconds left, no timeouts, and they're trying to go all the way 85 yards down the field. Just don't be that every week. Please find the middle ground between that.
Put the ball in Philip Rivers' hands with 2 minutes left. Problem solved. What are you talking about?
Oh, my God. You're just running around like a lunatic screaming at everybody. You don't even know who he's yelling at. I swear to God, it's a constant. 6:45 every Sunday.
No, you're right tackle. You can go over here. Oh, my God. What is it? The layup game on offense.
The whole thing. Every game with the Chargers, Philip Rivers. He was trying to mount a comeback with like 35 seconds left, no timeouts. They're 48 yards away.
Yeah.
They needed 5 points. They didn't need three. They didn't need two. They needed five every time. It was unbelievable, those situations that team worked themselves into consistently, no matter the roster, no matter the coach, no matter anything. That was their constant in life. It was unbelievable.
That's coaching. I mean, we're not going to see that because Belichick is going to have them ready for those situations. Like, he's going to know – guys are going to know what to do. It's just does Cam Newton have the same kind of wherewithal that Tom Brady had? The game can slow down and he can execute in those high-pressure situations. I mean, I think that's a fair question. Can Cam Newton do that? Is that at nearly the level that Tom Brady did that? But I'm not worried, though, about Bill Belichick having them ready to go. But, fascinating season coming up for the Patriots. And hopefully they at least look functional on Sunday. I win or lose. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's just sort of what makes it intriguing. I want to switch gears before we wrap things up, but I want to talk a little hockey real quick. I don't want to go a whole week without the people getting some hockey talk from our resident sports hub Bruins expert and big hockey nerd such as myself. And just taking an early glance at like who is going to be available in free agency and possible trade options, but not necessarily probable. I went through the list, going through guys on cap friendly, guys that I want who have the kind of size that I'm looking for and the kind of offensive upside where they would fit in the top six on the Bruins. And so I looked at left shot, left wings. The free agents, there's one name that's like intriguing to me, but the history might not be good enough. Maybe because of what happened in the past, it's not even possible. Maybe this guy wasn't the kind of player that we thought he was going to be back when the Bruins might had a chance to sign him. Jimmy Vesey is a free agent. Now, he's a big kid. He had the kind of top six upside coming into the league. Ended up signing with the Rangers. And now he's going to be available. And he could probably be had relatively affordable because I don't think he really broke out yet. At least not offensively. So you know more about Jimmy Vesey than I do. Just by default. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on if the Bruins could sign Jimmy Vesey? Do you think he would be a guy that could bolster their maybe at least the middle six, if not the top six?
I pass on him. Wasn't impressed at all his final season in New York. Wasn't impressed last year with Buffalo. I thought he had a great opportunity in front of him to win a job on a line with Jack Eichel. He never did. I think that's more of what you have. Listen, because I think if you sign him, now you're saying, okay, you're going to play Anders Bjork, you're going to play Jimmy Vesey, you're going to play Jack Stanika, you're going to play Jimmy Vesey. I would rather play those guys, maybe find the spot for them. You know, there are more young players coming up too. Zach Sinishin's a guy that I think is worth watching heading into next year. I don't like the idea of taking time away from those players who I believe are truly part of what you're trying to do here. To take a chance on this guy, I think that he would have made a better choice for himself had he come to Boston off the jump, not gone to the Rangers as a college free agent coming out of Harvard, and I think that ship has sailed. I wouldn't want to take a chance on him. He had 9 goals this year.
You know the numbers more than I do.
I don't think he hit double digits. Yeah, no. 20 points, 64 games, 9 goals, 10 points. I mean, 20 points. I'm good. I'd rather just have Anders Bjork there. And that's sort of one of the things that frustrated me this postseason was how much ice time they gave to Nick Ritchie, because I was looking at that saying, really want Bjork here. And I know he's not playing well, but if he plays here and he struggles here, he's going to be better off for it down the road. We're not stunting his playoff development here. We're accelerating it in a sense. You know, I look back at 2008 when the Bruins, you know, they had David Krejci in the playoffs. They had Vladimir Savoca in the playoffs. That made those guys better players. They weren't perfect, but it made them better players. And
Savoca's still in the league.
I know, which blows my mind. quick little side note. The Bruins had to decide between Savoca and Brad Marchand. I think they made the right call.
Crap, did they make the right call?
They had
They
had 2 5-foot-9 forwards, and they looked at it and said, not sure this is going to work long term. We got to get one of these guys out of here. They get Savoca. They get, I believe they got David Warsawski in return for him, which didn't really matter.
Honestly, I think Sweeney would have gone with Savoca, Don Sweeney.
I don't know. That's the thing, right? No way of knowing.
We'll never know.
But no, I pass on him.
All right. Well, the more fun conversation is with a trade. Now I'm talking a real hockey trade. I'm talking you package Jake DeBrusque, Anders Bjork, both of them if you need to. First round picks for guys that are under contract, established, big left wings that can score. And you can put them on either the first or second line, whatever you want to do. So, and these are guys where I know, like, you might say, like, well, yeah, obviously, I took, should they get Ovechkin? Like, I know there might be guys who are like, yeah, obviously, I'd take him. But I guess, tell me how, like, I guess how realistic it could be or how good of a fit this guy would be, how much you would want to take on the contract. I know you're not going to have all the data in front of you, so I'll let you pull them up if you need the time. But let's start with these more exciting names that I would love it if the Bruins went out and made a big, bold, swing for the fences type of trade. Jamie Benn.
Wouldn't happen. It'd be fun, but it wouldn't happen.
You think that he's locked in on Dallas?
Yeah, he's locked in. They like what they have there. I think they're more likely to trade one of the guys off their blue line or maybe a Radulov or somebody like that. I can't see them moving Benn. He's such an impactful piece of their organization.
He was on their fourth line like a couple games ago. Seems struggling.
Yeah, I think ultimately they know that if they trade him, they're not going to get the, you know, sort of the fair trade, so to speak. I think that they're not.
Yeah, but I want him.
I know you wanted him. You honestly though, you wanted him three or 4 years ago when he was truly phenomenal. He's entering that Bacchus zone soon. Where
I was going to say, watch, they'll trade for him when he's friggin' 33.
Yeah,
that's 40 points a year.
That's the problem. You want to avoid that. Those guys, you got to develop them or trade for them when they're 26.
Yeah. Max Pacioretty.
I think he's going to be Vegas's captain. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think that
who's the captain now?
They don't have one.
Oh.
Yeah, no, they don't have one. So I thought like their de facto captain was Derek Engelin, but obviously he's not anymore. So I think that their captains are going to be Mark Stone or Pacioretty. Ultimately he's a leadership guy. I don't see them trading him. A guy that I wish they did get from Vegas. He was in the rumor mill for a long time. I'm pretty sure he's out of it now. Is Alex Tuck? That's the guy that I
said before.
They got. Remember those rumors? It was like I forget what the rumored package was, but there was a rumor that he was on the block for a while, and you look at him now, and a pretty good player. But
trains left the station on that one.
You know, what'd be a nice guy to get though is his younger brother, who is going to be in the upcoming NHL draft. If you want to draft his brother? That'd be nice.
All right, Anders Lee.
I like Anders Lee.
Is he the captain? He might be the captain.
He is. He's the captain.
I don't know. I like the player. Right
now, yeah. No, he's good. I mean, and Anders Lee, I mean, the Islanders have a few of these wingers here who really were kind of criticized a lot in their careers and now are having breakout years. Another example of that on the Islanders is Josh Bailey, who really felt the wrath of Islanders fans for a long time. Wasn't producing enough, was a high pick, just never really put it all together. He's put it all together, and it makes me wonder if the Islanders would consider selling high on him, or if he's moved out of that range, is now a fixture of their lineup. But
you're saying Bailey, not
yeah, yeah. I'm saying Bailey, not Lee.
Bailey, I would like to. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a matter of you know, can he be what he has been this year on a consistent enough basis?
Right. Of course, but yeah, like I'm talking swing for the fences impact guy. Like Bailey would, yeah, could be a sleeper type of. All right, yeah. I have one more for you, Jonathan. Okay. Jonathan Huberdeau.
Too many injury concerns for me. Too many. He has concussion problems, I'm pretty sure. Which worries me given the way that he plays. In division trades are difficult to make as well. There is one guy from Florida that's a free agent that might be intriguing because he's been on their radar before. It's Mike Hoffman.
Okay.
He's on the smaller side. I think he's 5'10", 5'11", but God, he's got a shot. He has an absolute rocket.
That's a guy you're not worried about him being able to finish. So I exactly would like Mike Hoffman.
And if you put him with Krejci or with Coyle, pretty good. You're going to have to pay some money to get him, but
well, I'd pay him 7-8 million or something like that if he's going to get you 30, 40 goals, you know?
Yeah, I think he's 31 now, so he's getting that age. Okay. But, yeah. But I don't know.
But maybe he's not even worth that much. But yeah, I guess I wouldn't.
It was a name. It was a name they are into, though. You know,
okay. I wouldn't hate it if they. Yeah, I wouldn't hate it if they took the plunge on it. All right. So basically, they're not getting any of these guys. But I appreciate you humoring me. I'm gonna keep looking because I do think they just have to make a move like that because there's nothing in free agency and they have to make an upgrade in the top six somehow. And I think the only way to do it is to either get someone, either move Pasternak down with Krejci and get someone new for first line right wing, or you make an upgrade from DeBrusque on second line left wing. And I feel like, and they might only be able to do that via trade. So, like, I don't know. I just think this is something that's worth talking about, as unrealistic as it might be. But I think that's just what they have. I think it just has to be done if they want to win, if they want to actually have a real shot at winning a Stanley Cup with what's left of this veteran core. Like, isn't that, don't they sort of have to make a move like that?
What about Josh Anderson?
Anderson, I would like. Yeah. I don't know how much of a scoring threat
He's coming off an injury-plagued year, only played 26 games. He's had contentious fights with the Blue Jackets front office about his contract. His value is not nearly what it would have been a year ago, obviously. This time last year, he was coming off 27 goals. Was a monster for them in the postseason, or you know, it was a monster for them in so many ways with hits.
So you're saying they could get him while the stock is low, is what you're saying?
They could if Columbus is willing, right? And that's sort of the – Columbus has to basically admit that they're going to lose a trade, which I don't know if they would necessarily want to do. But again, with an upcoming contract dispute with him, you know, he held out of camp the last time he was due for a new deal. Maybe they look at it and say, okay, well, if we can get the good return here, let's do it. And I think I could see Columbus, honestly, I could see Columbus being a fit for Torrey Krug. Maybe you make some sort of crazy deal on draft day where you trade the rights for Torrey Krug and a collection of assets, because that's not going to be enough, obviously, for Josh Anderson. Maybe you take a flyer on that. I would try to do that. I would try to do something creative like that. And you go from there. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do when it comes to addressing this, because you are right that they're probably going to have to make a move through the trade market. I can't see a massive upgrade coming here through free agency. We talked about Hoffman, but Hoffman, is that the home run that elevates you to Tampa Bay's status? I don't know. It gets you closer, but does it close the gap? That's hard to say. I don't think so. So they have a ton of decisions coming up here. Sweeney held his year-end press conference today. Wasn't very helpful at all. Like anything he said, it was just kind of like, you know, I'm a little bit nervous here. They asked about Tampa Bay, and he said, well, it was a closer series than it looked. And it's like, well, not really.
How is that possible?
It really wasn't. Yeah, and so he mentioned how it was, you know, they win game one. They're an overtime loss away from winning game two. You know, he talks about game three being the blowout. Game four he thought was a better counterpunch. And he thought game five was anyone's game. I think he's right about some of those things. But to say that it was close I think is very generous. Tampa Bay dominated that series. From the second half of game one on, they dominated that series.
Yeah, you said that after game five, like the Bruins played well in game five, and they gave them their absolute best shot, and they still looked like they were way far away from the Lightning. So that was not a close series.
And maybe he's looking at it from the 20,000 feet approach, where he's looking at what's going to happen with Tampa. They're going to have to trade off one of their pieces this offseason. So maybe he looks at that and says, well, they're not going to be as strong as they were this year, next year. But I think that's a tough gamble to make, because we've seen what they've done.
Worry about your own team, please, instead of saying, well, you know, this team's going to get worse. Like, what if another team gets better?
Exactly. And I think that's something that we have to be mindful of in the Atlantic when it comes to Florida. I think Florida's going to be better.
Montreal, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I could see Buffalo. Montreal desperately. No, we're not talking about Buffalo. Buffalo has been disqualified from ever being considered.
Buffalo will not be good. They will not be good.
For 10 years now, you've heard about what a sleeper they could be.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Montreal needs a true first-line center. If they can get a first-line center, they're cooking with gas.
Is Kotkaniemi going to be that guy?
Maybe. I feel like he's Saku Koivu 2.0, though, where it's he's a first-round center, but is he, though? You know what
he's
I mean?
He's a great leader.
Yeah, so
he's a good teammate.
Yeah. I do think that there are some teams, though, coming up in the Atlantic that you got to be mindful of. So I think that you need this team to make a trade, an actual trade. And I circle back again to – I know it doesn't address the whole size thing, but – if Johnny Gaudreau is available, please make an offer. Please make a pitch.
But I mean, look, when you're talking about one of the most skilled guys in the league, I can deal with a 5'9" guy. He's going to put up 90, 100 points or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just sick of these undersized guys who can't finish. Yeah, that's what I'm sick of.
Yeah, that's true. I would love it if they could, and maybe they want to look at it another year, but – I would abandon the Nick Ritchie experiment. I would trade him if you can. If you can find someone to take him off your hands,
I
would do it because I think that if you have Trent Frederick, you may as well go with that, because Nick Ritchie's best fit for you is on your fourth line. I'd rather give that to Frederick and let him go to town, or Kuhlman or somebody like that, and just say, have at it, versus paying this guy 2 million to basically just be a square peg.
I never argued that Nick Ritchie was good, or that Nick Ritchie was good to have. I just thought he was their best option for a guy to play a big, heavy game. And now Trent Frederick is that guy. And just I thought it wasn't necessarily a good thing that he was their best option. It was a bad thing that he was their best option in that regard. I do think they're going to need someone like that. I think that's Tampa added multiple guys like that, and that's why I think they're going to go win the Stanley Cup this year. It's going to be a big part of it. So, I mean, yeah, Trent Frederick, time to see what he can do. And that brings me to the defense, just real quick. I think after looking through potential free agents, I think defense, you just gotta stick with what you have and see what the young guys can do at this point. Move Grizzlick and Lozon up, move Chara down to the third pair, penalty killing type of role. Hope maybe see what Bakkanainen can do, see if he's ready to step in. Where do you stand on that now that we've had a week or so to think about it as far as what to do with the defense?
Yeah, so I'm actually writing about this for 98.5.com. I do like the idea of reuniting Chara and Carlo. Now, it's not the bump down that everyone expects that Chara to have, you know, off a top pair down the third pairing. I think it's more second pairing. I think that's more appropriate for him at this point, but it creates a shutdown pairing. These guys were together Carlo's first year. And what I liked about that is that it allowed Carlo to be more of an offensive-minded defenseman. Now, he wasn't going to score 40 points, but he was the guy in charge on that pairing of driving play the other way. So I'd like to see him do more of that. I think he needs to do more of that. And this would be the best way to get him to do that. So if I were drawing it up right now, I would say that my team, my defense for next year, if I'm the Bruins, is it's Grizzlick and McAvoy, my top pair. It's Chara, Carlo on the second pair. And then it's Lozon /Moore/Vakanainen or Zaboral, whoever takes the job there, and Connor Clifton. And I think that's what your defense looks like. And that third pairing will have some growing pains, yes. But I think ultimately, if it is what it needs to be to be effective, it will be a boost for you. I think it will be a net gain more than there's a loss So that's my defense, I would say, heading into next season. Chara in the second pairing role, reunited with Carlo, again, allows Carlo to be more of a offensive-minded guy, leading the breakout, activating when possible, getting his game up to where it can be. Because when he's with Torrey Krug, he's not that guy. He's get the F back. That's him. So I think putting him in that role would allow him to become more of a more complete player with the puck on his stick. So that's what I do heading into next year.
I agree.
And I will say this before we get out of here. Don't sleep on Zboril, if only because everyone from Providence said that he was one of their best players down the stretch last year. So keep in mind, he made the team out of camp. He made the team out of camp last year. He didn't get in the game, but they did carry him for their opening night roster.
What happened?
He was extra body, but they thought he earned that right to be that.
Oh, okay. Guy. So he was okay. So he started up at the press box. Okay.
Yeah, and what I'll say is this too: is that next training camp, he is waiver eligible, so they couldn't sneak him down to Providence again. So he has to make the team. It's make the team or bust. So, you know, truly make the team robust right here. So I do think that's something to watch when training camp does get underway. He has the most pressure on him to solidify a spot in the NHL on the NHL roster this year.
Wouldn't that be something if all of a sudden Zboril, he just marinates for 5 years and then all of a sudden he's a top pairing defenseman right out the chute like that? That would be something. I mean, that's probably wishful thinking and overly optimistic on my part, but we are talking about a first round pick who's getting good reviews. So
I want to see his skating game. That was the biggest thing I had against him, was that his skating game was just lunky. It felt like he had cement skates. So I want to see if that's improved at all, because I think you have to skate well to make it in the system that they want you to play. But if he can become a, you know, and this is, I don't want to put this pressure on him or this expectation on him, because I've seen what it's done to Charlie McAvoy. Everyone thinks he's going to be Drew Doughty. If Zboril could become a Radko Gudas type, you know, who's playing strong D zone, but has a little bit of nasty to his game, I'll take that. I'll take that every time if he can do it. It's not what I wanted. I thought he'd be more along the lines of a 40-point guy, but if he can become a Gudas, I'm okay with that on your third pairing.
I like a Gudas with my crackers.
That's right.
I didn't know if you were going to get that. That was a home run swing for a dad joke. At least, I mean, you know, at least Radko Gudas is an NHL defenseman.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we can leave it at that. We've had over an hour to talk some sports. I'm glad we're back. Football season. I'm not sure when the next one will be. Maybe we'll do something after the Patriots game. I don't know. We'll see what happens. There's going to be plenty to talk about next week, and we'll keep the hockey talk going through the off season as much as we can. Sports Hub Sidelines podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. I love you. Please rate and review. 5 stars only, positive reviews only, please. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.